you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
Janet, what's a podcast?
A podcast is a thing humans invented to procrastinate from doing important things, like actual work or spending time with their families.
Neat. Enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm your guest host, Jason Mantzoukas. I play Derek. Don't worry about it. Today we're talking about Chapter 38, Season 3, Episode 11, Chidi Sees the Time Knife. Written by Christopher Ansell and Joe Mandy, directed by Jude Wang, including guest cast Mary Beth Monroe, Mark Evan Jackson, Asia Bullock, and starring Jason Mantzoukas as Derek. Kaboom! Back, baby! That's right! Here he is! Derek is back! Also, Brandon Scott Jones and Maya Rudolph. Here we go. Michael, Janet, and the humans meet with the judge in the interdimensional hole of pancakes. Jason asks Janet to be his girlfriend. Michael pitches to the judge how complicated modern life is. She visits Earth and determines that it stinks. Sean makes a case for why humans are bad. Chidi comes up with the idea to repeat the neighborhood experiment on four new subjects. The two sides compromise to build a new neighborhood at Mindy St. Clair's, and the judge lays out the rules. Janet introduces Jason to a new, sophisticated Derek. That's me, Jason Mantzoukas, the actor playing Derek, who is the star of this episode, who has been rebooted many times and now has slicked back hair, a tuxedo, and drinks a martini. Sean reveals to Michael that when his experiment fails, he's going to use a Michael suit to torture the humans. Michael panics, and Eleanor looks concerned. Boom. Flawless. For all you know, I did it in one take. My guests today are visual effects supervisor David Neednoggle, co-writer of the episode Joe Mandy, and Mark Evan Jackson, who plays Sean. Mark, Joe, David, welcome. Everything is Derek.
Hi, thank you.
How are you, gents?
Nailed it in one.
I got through the whole thing effortlessly, flawlessly.
So good, dude.
We begin with why I'm doing this. I am doing this so that you can do that.
Okay.
Mark, I'm here so that you can be interviewed because you do such an amazing job week after week, poking and prodding all of the people associated with the making of this wonderful show, getting amazing stories and backgrounds about the people that make up all of the legendary elements of this show, and yet we know nothing about you. You, sir, remain a mystery.
That's true. This was your idea when you were on during season two, I think, along with Rosie, Jeff Rosenberg, who had, listeners will recall, a very phlegmy cough.
He had a wet cough, and he arrived, I don't remember if we talked about this that day, he arrived that day and announced to me that his left eye had stopped working that morning. He used the phrase, stopped working,
right.
And I was like, you should be in a hospital, not about to record a podcast.
Not in a tent made of furniture pads on the 22nd floor
That's why he's
entertainment.
That's why he's Rosie.
Exactly.
You know, like, I would have made Rosie take me to the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, regardless. Mm-hmm. I call Rosie to take me to the hospital when we're not working on a job together.
That came up. I know.
Anyway, so yes, I said to you then, you don't ever get to be interviewed.
Right.
And so I want to come in and do your job so that you can feel free to just poke and be nonsensical like we get to be.
Love it.
Normal guests.
I'm about to phone this in.
Oh, yeah. So the beginning of this episode takes place on the bridge. They come to the door that's going to bring them to the IHOP, the International Hole of Pancakes. Neat Noggle, what's the story with this door?
The whole idea of the bridge area, I mean, it's basically the neutral zone. They're basically coming from the door that they left in the previous episode, the Book of Dougs. And so it's kind of where all these different doors are that you can kind of go to different places and how you'd kind of get to the accountant's office and stuff like that. And so for me, I always get the opportunity to kind of squeeze little things in there that are, I guess, little Easter eggs that sometimes only I know, but since I'm here, I can kind of talk about them. But kind of the opening shot when you come in, there's like three doors that you can kind of see at the head of the shot. And off to the left is, I use the door from Monsters, Inc., which is Boo's door there. And then in the middle is the door from Scott Pilgrim, which is one of my favorite movies. And then the far right door is my front door to my house. So
that door is where? What's your exact home address?
don't say, because it's a fun game to use Google Maps.
Because people will want, fans will want to come and knock on that door.
Oh, I know. It's kind of like a scavenger hunt. So you kind of have to
That poor person who is being plagued by the fact that Breaking Bad fans are throwing pizza on their roof in Albuquerque for years.
People walk by like, that's the door.
That's the door. We got to knock on that door.
It's
that's Neat Noggle's door.
Well, it's one of the three doors.
Yeah.
You know about the other two doors, right? Yeah, obviously. I'm also camped out on Neat Noggle's front lawn. I feel like this season, Neat Noggle, for you, has been a real step up.
It was kind of crazy. At the end of season two, I remember, you know, they're back on Earth, and I was talking to Stacey Milburn, who's our post PA, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to have a job next season because they're on Earth. And this has been the biggest season that we've had. I think we've done 1,200 shots this season, which
comparatively,
is,
how many do you do?
So, like,
in
the first
past?
The first season was probably about 650.
Oh, wow.
Last season was about 1,000.
Okay.
And this season was 1,200.
What's a shot?
Every cut. Oh, so it's a lot. And
in this episode specifically?
About 165.
Wow.
So,
and are you willing to say right here, right now, at the end of this season, here we are, 1,200 shots.
Uh-huh.
Are you willing to say next season, season four, 2,400 shots? Are you willing to promise this audience double the number of effect shots next year? Neat Noggle, yes or no?
I mean, if that's the case, they can talk about it at my funeral because
straight
there's
from
no
the
way
Neat Noggle's mouth, he will die for this show.
Just pretty close to that. So,
speaking of which, we have in this scene where we start off in the IHOP, the International Hole of Pancakes, and we find a being, a creature, wraps itself around Tahani's neck, and this is a Neat Noggle.
It is.
And were you like, when am I getting my role? Where's my shot? Do you voice that being?
I did a little bit of a voice for it.
Nice.
So Brent, the sound supervisor, he hit me up just yesterday, and he's like, hey, you know, would you want to do some of the voice for the Neat Noggle? I'm like, sure, why not?
Yeah, it's
you
know? Right.
Yeah, and so it's kind of layered. It's got a couple, I think there's some squirrel in there.
Oh.
So it pairs really well with my voice.
That's what
like
they,
wine
they brought a pairs. Squirrel in there? Or
yeah,
you
so
did
we were side by side.
You did a squirrel voice.
He went first, and so I knew I had a lot to live up to. But
how
I think
often do you find yourself auditioning against squirrels? I know for me, it is quite often.
Yeah.
So it was kind of weird because I think in the original script, it wasn't called a Neat Noggle. It was called, I think it was like a snarf or a snorf or something.
Snorf, I believe. Yeah, it was a nonsense word. And then I believe we
made it into a totally logical word.
Well, it was funny because like we were like, we can do better than snorf. And then it was like a full hour of us pitching on other nonsense words. I forgot who was just like, what are we even doing
for an
here?
Hour.
Yeah.
Can you repeat like 20 to 30 of them for us here?
I mean,
do you remember?
It's all just stuff like gleep, glorp, whatever. Yeah. And then someone was just like, what are we even doing? It's obviously Neat Noggle. And we were all like, of course.
And from what I've heard, that was Megan Emmerich.
Okay, yeah,
and
that
so,
makes sense.
Which that she's the one that came to her senses and realized that a Neat Noggle is a slug-like creature.
It's the perfect nonsense word
and
for
so,
this being.
Yeah, so that was really weird to have that. And I think even on top of that, having Ted Danson say, Tahani, don't touch the knee noggle. And yeah. So it's that is really weird. Yeah. So no, it was a lot of fun putting that together and a kind of a little Easter egg with it. Like if you look at the tail.
Does it say the word Mason?
And.
Oh, I missed it.
Dot, which are my two daughters.
I wondered.
Wow. And so I put that on the tail. So
their first and last names are represented on that beam?
Yes. I mean, seeing it's the knee noggle, yeah. And you got Mason and Dot.
Yeah.
So.
That's pretty rad.
It was.
Because we've talked about this before, you like previs a lot of stuff using your kids as like the voices.
That's right. When you work as much as I do, you got to include them in what you're doing just to kind of keep that time together. So
now, do they get paid for that work?
With room and board.
I'd love to talk to you about, as a SAG rep, I have huge problems with this, okay? I'm going to talk to you about child labor laws.
Yeah.
Those kids need to be taught. If you're going to be using these kids as actors, okay, need not. Okay. And this is not to just dig in too deep and hard on you right here, but we start off in a crazy world. Like the world of the IHOP. By the way, how do you come to IHOP, Mandy? Do you guys just...
That was a throwaway joke from, I believe, season 2.
Oh, okay.
And it was just like there's the good place, the bad place. Those are the two realms, and then, of course there's the IHOP. What's the IHOP? Interdimensional.
And is there like a macro list of unfulfilled things that are out there that you are like if we can?
Yeah, maybe I think we all just sort of remember certain jokes that we that liked, and then that was just one that we knew at some point. Oh, once we're out of these two places, that's a logical third place we can go that is, we can't even imagine what that place even is.
You know,
that's Need Noggle.
And that's like the realm of Need Noggle.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that the Need Noggles live in this crazy, and it is like a nonsense, like the inside, what is it that Tahani refers to it as a Diane von Furstenberg pattern from 2013.
Yeah.
It is like a lot of overlapping kind of like circles and colors, and it looks like both inside the body and outer space. And everything like
how do you come up with a black light
Pink Floyd kind of
it was kind of weird because Mike called me over to the writer's room when I was on set to, you know, hey, like we want to pitch you an idea, see what's going on. He's like, okay, we want them to go into the IHOP. I'm like, all right, what does that look like? And he just kind of looked at me and just kind of giggled and was like, yeah. And so I'm like, all right, that's not much direction, but let me, you know. So I went back and I did a really quick sketch. I came back and I showed like the writers and like, hey, this is kind of what I'm thinking. And it's pretty similar to what it ended up. Maybe colors are a little bit off. And it was so fun for me to see, not being a writer, but it, literally in like 15 seconds, there were like 10 jokes coming out of nowhere. And I think like the 10th dimension one was like one that came out right away. And so I took that sketch and then I went and did a really quick like animated previs, just be like, okay, they're spinning around and doing this. So when we were on set, I was able to show everybody like, this is kind of where it's going. And again, it kind of kept the same feeling, but it ultimately ended up looking a little different.
Yeah, and there's something very funny about landing on this, like committing to this idea, we're going to be in the interdimensional hole of pancakes, but then like talking very seriously in production meetings, like, so the pancakes are, it's just a colloquialism for a portal, basically. So like they look like pancakes, but they are portals. We got to be very mindful of that, that they're not actually real pancakes.
I didn't put that together. So that thing that Maya reaches up over her head and grabs and throws that we did whole workshops on.
Yes.
Because there are some deleted scenes, but those are pancakes. I was in this episode, never even thought about it.
Which is funny because they are literally pancakes because I made pancakes with my daughters.
What are you
And we
about?
Took pictures of them.
Whoa.
And that was like the texture. And so in their earlier version, it kind of had like the whiter outside of like a pancake.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mike was like, I think that's a little bit too over the top, you know,
too
Hitchhiker's.
Pancake-y.
Yeah. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. Yeah. Yeah. That, it's like, can we just lose the white part? So I kind of scaled it out and got rid of that. But those are
actual pancakes.
Yeah. And so I think there's a line where
love that.
Jason says, like if you eat one of these pancakes, you'll explode. And my daughter's all excited because she's like, I ate those pancakes.
Right.
And she didn't explode.
Yeah, so that's amazing.
Yeah. But they're actual pancakes that I made with my daughter. So
I love that. And I love that, like, they start off in this kind of like really psychedelic space. And then when Maya enters as the judge, she kind of transports or makes it appear to them as if they are in an actual IHOP, like an International House of Pancakes, so that the setting immediately changes, but they are still in that place. So now the need noggle that's wrapped around Tahani's neck is a delightful green scarf that she is freaking out over because everybody is still telling her not to touch it. And I love, and I'm not sure if we can we talk about, we can cut this out if we want, but can we talk about the fact that there is a third iteration of this scene?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, in which they are once again transported to a third location.
Well,
and
the location need-noggle that Sean's character
right. yeah.
yes.
most wants to be.
Right, there was a beat in the script, which is really funny to think about in terms of money and production
yes.
time. After I'm drawn in, after I'm summoned, I had had a line that said, wait, why do they get to be where they want to be? I want to be where I want to be. And I reach up and I grab, and this is where we had to workshop this. I reach up and I grab what I now know to be a pancake.
Yes.
And I transport us to the hallway outside the men's room at a Philadelphia Flyers game on $1 chili dog night.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's your ideal right. setting. That's where you feel most comfortable.
So it's a diarrhea factor.
It was disgusting. I mean, yeah. we shot it, but when I say money, what I mean is that, like, we moved the entire company and cast
yeah.
to a parking structure on the Universal lot
right.
that they had dressed up to be a disgusting hallway outside of a
it
Flyers
game. Like a
it looked
exactly
arena. Like a hockey
yeah,
arena.
It was beautiful.
Hockey arena. And then it gets cut instantly.
Yeah, you know, and it wasn't due to the fact that it was a very funny scene, actually, because the need noggle, instead of being a scarf, became like a Flyers fan.
A dude.
Like a man.
Right.
Like a creepy person.
Like a slug-like man. He was an amazing performance, actually, by that actor. And
he had his arm draped around Jamila, and there was a take where he was, like, staring directly at camera.
Right down the barrel.
It was like, we obviously would never do that, but for this, it was so perfect, and it was just...
oh, that's great.
So but it just became like, this is so confusing. It's like, we're just asking a lot of the audience to know, like, okay, we're not in an
IHOP. How often is that brought up for this show? This is too confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
like, what's the line? Where does it break? Is there someone in the room who is a voice of reason?
Or certainly not me. I'll tell you that. Yeah.
Daddy. Is it daddy?
Sometimes. Yeah.
So I actually went back to look at that beat of script because my question was going to be, like, how do you replace the dialogue, the story, the logic of the plot when you cut out an entire scene like that? There was none.
No.
That was just a cutaway to a disgusting hallway on purpose to get a gag in with the need noggle. Yeah.
Which was kind of funny because that scene kind of played into the boardroom scene as well, because Jason shows up with a hot dog and a beer.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Janet's like, hey, why do you have that hot dog? And she grabs and throws it and it explodes. And that came out. But the whole time, Manny has a beer.
A plastic cup of water now.
Yeah.
Right?
And so I had to make the beer into water.
Like Christ.
Yes.
You turned the beer into water.
Yeah.
Everybody says need noggle. He's kind of a reverse Christ.
Yeah, I say it all the time.
Not an antichrist.
No,
very big difference.
Very
he's like
one
a reverse Christ.
One over Christ. Yeah.
So that whole scene, I had to change the beer to water.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay, so I've got a question that is kind of like a bit of understanding what's behind the show. You, Joe, are listed as having co-written this episode.
Right.
Other times when two writers are on a show, they are a team, like Dylan and Josh, for example. But you and Chris are not a team. What does it mean to be co-writing an episode with another writer as not a team?
Yeah, we do this a few times a year, and... it can vary, but the way we did this was Chris took the cold open first act and second act, and I did like the third act and fourth act, and then we kind of meet up after a few days and kind of merge them together and smooth out each other's
part. Are you guys talking while you're going to say, like, oh, I'm doing this? So you're
a little
both,
bit.
You're both going off of, I'm sure, the outline that the room broke.
Correct. And actually, he went off before me, and I think I was doing stand-up, actually, in San Francisco. All right.
Not as an art form, you.
Yeah, you.
No, oh, okay. No, that makes sense then. So, but we were in constant contact, and so he was sending me drafts, and eventually we sort of merged our scenes together, and then group edit everything.
The whole room, not the two of you, just the whole room.
Yeah, okay, well, we work on it ourselves and present it to the room. Everyone reads it, and we slowly start to tear it apart and put it back together. But that's essentially
so,
how we
like
do it.
Yeah. So traditionally, you know, like that's how it would go. You would write the whole script, bring it to the room, and the room would group edit.
Right.
But in this instance, you kind of cut it in half.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It so is, then, are you ever writing on Chris's pages? Is he ever writing on your pages, or is it just in the edit, in the editing of later?
Typically, we'll spend a day together going over each other's stuff and reworking it. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so then what happens is Maya, as the judge, has her moment. Ted, you know, Michael explains to her everything that's been going on, what he's discovered about the point system, how it's been, nobody has gotten into the good place in 500 years, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, she decides she's going to go to Earth to check it out for herself. Right. She's gone for a couple of seconds, comes back, and is like, oof, magoof, that's no good.
That is rough.
Yeah, and there is like a series of unreal Maya Rudolph, just like exasperated, like the whole run she goes on of where she went and what she saw.
I mean, her pronunciation of Paraguay is my favorite thing.
Amazing.
World.
In true Maya fashion, I was there for this.
Yeah.
It started as Paraguay.
Yep.
And then as we went on, it became Paraguay.
Like,
just as the day wears on.
Like, so much spin.
She's going to turn it to 11.
Oh, amazing. And I love, and it's like such a perfect, that is the, I love a simple bit of just like over and over pronouncing. Like, I remember somebody came back in college from junior year abroad and would only say they had been to Nicaragua.
Oh, sure.
And being like, oh, I hate you.
Gross.
Now you're the worst.
So gross.
I love that she went to a Black Friday sale at an outlet mall in Michigan
for the deals. Yeah.
She Googles big juicy natural tomatoes, which I then Googled.
Oh, what happened?
You know, not what I was hoping.
Oh, sorry.
I'll be honest, not what I was hoping.
What was promised. Yeah.
So I have now started a website called bigjuicynaturaltomatoes.tits. It is. Oh, I just got a text. It has been shut down.
It has been barred.
Interesting. The judge, Maya, decides that Michael's point being valid, things need to change. So she calls in Sean. Boom, Sean is in the middle of telling a classic Sean hilarious joke.
Oh, I mean, this was your bit, right?
I mean, I'm sure I had some responsibility for this, yeah.
Was this what it was in the script, or did you guys do a bunch of different...
No, this was... I mean, this is probably first thought, best thought. Yeah. The best way to torture William Shakespeare.
Is to describe the plot of the Entourage movie.
Yeah.
The only thing that was different, though, in the script is that I didn't know the story of the Entourage movie, so I came to Joe on set, and I was like, what's the rest of this sentence?
Oh.
Then Turtle makes a bet with Ronda Rousey, and if she loses, she has to, .. it said. Mm-hmm. And you said, bone him.
Yeah.
And so I added the beginning of that.
Yeah,
to,
right, you were about to say yes.
Then she has to, bow, come on. that's the only thing that was different than the script.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, and I was appalled that you didn't know the plot.
How do you know the plot of the Entourage movie?
I watched the series. The movie...
You watched the series and didn't cap it off with the movie, which is the absolute natural finish of one of our greatest treasured
I reject. You told me that there were problems with the... A song appears in the Entourage movie that hadn't been written.
That was just turning into a podcast about the Entourage movie.
Welcome to episode one of the Entourage movie podcast. Breakdown.
The issue I have with the Entourage movie that I sometimes can't sleep at night because I think about is that...
The issue? There's one issue.
Well, there's one main issue. I mean, other than just like rampant misogyny, etc. But that the movie takes place immediately following the finale of the series.
Right.
However, it's Jeremy Berryman logic where... 5 years have passed. So, like, people are partying with Russell Westbrook, what's his name? Russell Wilson, quarterback. Gronk is there. Pharrell's wearing a big hat. But all these things happened years after the end of the finale. So, like, Gronk is a college football player.
It's the dot in the eye. Sometimes Tuesday.
Exactly.
Also, never.
The dot in the eye is the Entourage.
Sean arrives, and this gives us an opportunity, Mark, to ask you, how did you get to this show? How did you, now we're in it a bit. I'm curious because you've not been interviewed for this show.
Right.
So I'm sure you've covered it a little bit, but I'm curious, as a veteran of many other Mike Schur productions, like, how do you come to this?
I was offered the role after Nick Offerman turned it down, and conceivably dozens of others.
He's offerman only.
That's true.
Love it.
Love it. And so I got the offer, and as you and I discussed, when your people call and say, Mike Schur's got something for you, we're going to check it out, you're like, don't bother checking it out, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was super weird because the sides were all, the sides that I got for this, once I accepted the offer, were not embargoed, they were not fake sides, but they didn't make any sense because there were characters named Real Eleanor Shellstrap and Fake Eleanor Shellstrap, right. And the show hadn't aired yet, not a frame of it, and there was nothing you could Google, and I think anything that you did Google had Janet Della D'Annunzio, violin something or other, right? And there was nothing to do. So this has occurred to me since I've told this story, like, you're sitting there going, why is he telling me this? Like, what, like, just give me the broad strokes. Why are you starting at the beginning? Like, I don't need this. And then minutes in, you're like, oh, I'm going to need so much more than this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What are you talking about? Because it was so complex. And Jason, as you and I have talked about before, like, this was a mystery box show that nobody knew was a mystery box show for 90% of the first season.
Like, oh, no. It was like Lost without, you were watching Lost without realizing you were watching Lost,
guys,
which was pretty exceptional.
Talking with Mike Schur and Darcy Carden about a month ago, I had never watched Lost.
Oh, wow.
Now I'm nearly done, and we should talk about Lost.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to episode one of the Lost Pod. Today, we're talking
about the Entourage movie.
The Entourage movie. Season 3, episode 11 or 12 of The Good Place.
I'm not sure those Dharma Initiative guys are good.
Ooh, wait. You're not done yet? Where are you? Where are you in the series? I'm curious. Okay, so we've barely scratched the surface of this episode. Sorry.
A lot happened.
This is like a dense episode.
It's weird because it's a dense episode, and yet it's kind of a bottle episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this must be a story thing, a thing that you guys do for interest, because there have been episodes earlier in this season especially where there's a lot of discussion just about philosophy, and it's like, oh, we should go to a library for this. We should go to a diner for this. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to jump around to keep it visually interesting, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, that was part of it, is that this was... There was this section between, we had a very good sense of what the Janet's episode was going to be, and we had a very good sense of what the finale was going to be. And that middle section, just a lot of stuff had to happen.
Yeah.
And this episode is the one where we're basically like explaining the premise of the season / the show, the future of the show. And so it's just like a lot of talking needs to occur, and you can't just sit. And we've been very specific about like not having like sitting in a courtroom and just pleading one side versus another.
Sure.
That will get very, very stale.
The boardroom in this episode is about as courtroom deliberation, mediation.
Right, because that's the judge is still deciding
right. What
her verdict is. That's it.
And what's good is not having it be just like Sean and Michael going head to head. Like, you guys are always surrounded by the gallery of morons. Who can distract and pipe up, and all of the asides, whether it's, you know, whether it's Jason, you know, convinced they're all on salvia or any of that stuff. Like,
Jason's actually explaining this pretty heady concept of context to the judge, which
is great.
Big Noodle's house.
I love
how his grandparents live.
Big Noodle's house. I loved like the world of Jason's descriptions. Like, we're all just going to wake up in Pillboy's broken hot tub, which to me, I was like, Pillboy's broken hot tub?
Oh,
that is deeply sad.
Yeah.
Which made an appearance in the Janet's episode of Full Social is great.
Oh, Big Noodle. There's a bunch.
And that it's not weird in Jacksonville to have your grandparents all be in the same bed like in Willy Wonka. It's just like,
all four of them, like, poor Big Noodle.
This got cut for time, but I was reminded of it going through this script. In that story, he said, I used to yell at Big Noodle because he always showed up late to rehearsal. Then one day, the swamp under my house flooded, and the Coast Guard had to rip off my roof and airlift a nurse shark out of my living room. Like, I'm sure it got cut for time, but the specificity of that stuff is
And I
ridiculous.
Like that the Coast Guard airlifted the shark and not him.
Yeah, not Jason.
He stayed.
Well, you have to have priorities.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I really liked in the boardroom scene, this is, again, Neidnagel, where you come in, where... where Chidi gets sucked into
a pancake.
And then starts zooming around the room as a tiny Chidi.
Yeah.
Gleefully.
Mike, I think, really liked that scene a lot. He was giggling like a little schoolgirl when he's watching that.
It does. It becomes like a cartoon of like this tiny Chidi just like zipping around the room.
Yeah. And Will did a great job of when he goes, that's all him. Like, I just made a little like kind of poof come up, but he mimed that so well of his going ball to the floor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because he is, you know, his character is so buttoned up and such a like restrained dork that was like such an opportunity for him to do
physical
stuff.
When he gets to do physical stuff, it's pretty great.
Yes. Yeah.
And when Chidi comes back in his full size, he reveals that he has seen the titular to this episode, the time knife.
Yes.
When did the time knife get brought up? When did you guys start exploring what the time knife could be, or that it would be called the time knife? Is there such a thing as a time knife and I'm just not aware of it?
I mean, maybe there is. Like, I think it was just, we sometimes like to, the theater of the mind of just you. What was he experiencing when he was going in and out of the pancakes in that moment? And we came on this thing of this sort of beautifully described thing of time folding in on itself, and then Michael just sort of offhandedly being like, we know what the time is,
kind of brushing it off. Yeah. You know, like we need to get down to the real thing. Stop talking about the time knife.
Yeah, who cares about the time knife?
And then I love that
it's like almost like it's hack or something.
Yeah, and I love that that Will just can't like wrap his head around moving on,
right,
having seen what he's just seen.
Yeah, right.
And he does, his performance is really like really big and funny. This like, because I just saw the time knife.
Right.
It really made me laugh.
Ted does something delicious right after that too, where he tries to save face in front of the judge, where he's like, I mean, it's almost a silent movie where he's like, ooh. Like, it's really just a funny, very Ted moment of like, we should, okay, he'll be fine. You know, like.
Okay, so the judge, Maya, has brought Sean and Michael and everybody else together to figure out the discrepancy between the point system and getting people in. And Michael is kind of trying to explain to her that the kind of example he can give to why this is a broken system is that the humans in his experiment got better. Like, when they were put into his neighborhood, what was meant to be torture inadvertently caused them to work together to become better people. And Sean is, as always, not on
board. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, not on board.
And comes at it, like, really hard. You're like...
Well, I mean, Sean is not incorrect in the sense that that was a very artificial environment. It's Chidi's character that dials that in. But Sean's point is well taken, I think, to say, like, you know, maybe it's maybe it didn't happen. Maybe it's a fluke, if it happened at all. But you weren't keeping track of their points, because we've established that point totals don't vary once you're in the afterlife. So it's, you know, it's an interesting thing. And Joe, I'd love your perspective on this. The line, no one's gotten into the good place in over 500 years, I had in a scene in my office in season 2.
Yeah.
And it got kind of paused. Like, you guys, I think it was too much to give away.
And it was cut.
It was cut. Yeah.
It was in the scene in my office, I think, when Ted comes in and I tell him to axe up and
you marbleize Janet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, Mike, smartly, I think, he knows when to, like, when something's, like, too big of a concept to just waste on a scene like that,
right,
in a final episode of a season. Like, something we've talked a lot about. It was a huge, huge concept, and it almost, like, you couldn't even really internalize it because so much was happening in that scene that it's just like, what, 500 years? It wasn't the right place and time for that idea. So
yeah,
we saved it. We knew we were going to use it this season, and we wanted to just, like, really make sure that was done properly.
That seems like a really great place for it, because right here in this moment is when, you know, Sean's like, I don't think this, you know, you don't have any proof. And that's where Chidi, once he gets back from knee-noggling, is like, wait, Simone taught us how to do this.
Yeah.
We know how to do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so his pitch is we need to redo the experiment. And then the question becomes where, because it can't be done in either the good or the bad place. And so, boom, we end up in the medium place. Back at Mindy St. Clair's, you know, ding dong, ring the doorbell. Everybody's there. We need your backyard. And I will say I'm now setting myself up, because we get the reintroduction of Derek, only Derek. And I got this call, which was First, I was told that Derek was going to come back, which I was thrilled about.
Yeah.
But what it sounded like was going to happen was one thing. I was told, oh, you're coming back, and this is what it is. And I'm not going to say what it is because it turned out to not be that.
Mm.
And so then the day before I went, I got pages or I got something. It referred to him as Suave Derek.
Yeah.
And I was like, hang on, this isn't what I was told about.
Well, I super need to know what you were told about.
I was told that because Mary Beth was pregnant,
oh, yes,
that was going to play into the Derek and Mindy St. Clair storyline.
Mary Beth Monroe was in real life pregnant.
Was in real life quite pregnant.
Yes, very.
And so that the reality would be that we would use that and that somehow, and I didn't know what the story was going to be, that I just was told it's likely to involve that she somehow has gotten pregnant with Derek. And then, our gang kind of goes into Mindy St. Clair's, except for Janet and Jason, because Derek is, Mindy says to Janet that Derek will be very excited that you're here.
Yeah, stroking her mustache.
Yes, very mustache twirly. and then, but Jason, having now been rebooted, doesn't remember who Derek is, and so Janet has to explain to Jason that she has a history with this person, that she built a rebound boyfriend, a rebound booty call. Yes, a son rebound booty call.
If you need to put a label on.
If you have a little label on.
Yeah, exactly. But so that he shouldn't be jealous, because also he's a bit broken. He's like
He's a buffoon,
yeah, she
never
says.
Never really worked.
Except. And then enter,
ooh,
boom, Suave Derek. They were like, we want to straighten your hair and have it, you wear a tux like it's a James Bond character. And I was like, done. I'm in. Show up an hour early to straighten my hair? Yes, please.
Yeah.
And so it just became Derek has been rebooted 500,000 times, each time increasing his intelligence slightly.
Which is huge because Janet's been rebooted like 800 and some and has had a giant evolution.
Yes.
Right. So half a million is a lot.
Yes. A million in a short time, but not enough. Not enough. There's still moments where you see the brokenness or the how off Derek is.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them involving his martinis, which I took great pleasure in, along with Joe, figuring out all the different.
And what has this become of your wind chimes as well?
Yes.
A lot of...
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of how functional is the penis that I now have? How much is it wind chimes or not?
Yeah.
How much? There's a lot of.
There are times when, if I'm the only writer on set, I can sort of lose myself in the moment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And, oh, really? Butthole spiders?
Yeah, exactly. And there were a lot of takes of you describing. I have a small boy's penis, and I was like, well, yeah, of course. And then
and then Morgan showed up.
That was my favorite. My favorite like scolding or note I've ever gotten was Morgan coming up to me and saying, maybe we should get one take where he doesn't describe his little boy's penis.
It was very fun. There was a lot of like to introduce Suave Derek like speaking lines of Edgar Allan Poe, like, you know, like it was really fun to have a.
Was that you or was that in the script?
That was in the script.
Okay.
Like it was fun to come in. What I love about this show is I can be playing the same character, completely different character, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, completely different mechanics to what he does now.
I love any entrance that involves the words, oh, sorry, I didn't see you there.
After a monologue.
After a screen door.
Yeah,
and
after a screen door
a
and a monologue. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you there.
There was a take, I believe, a few takes where after you recite the poem, you give a really dark biography of Edgar Allan Poe's life.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that was in there till the end when they cut it down. That was one of the things I had to go. It was about he died of rabies and married his 13-year-old cousin or something like that.
If I had my way, it would have been all about 13-year-old cousins and boys' penises.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be fired.
That's the Joe Mandy story. Welcome to the Joe Mandy podcast.
Episode one.
It's all 13-year-old wives and little boys' penises.
Now let's talk about the entourage.
I was concerned that this wasn't going to be different enough from how I host the show.
Okay, so we're going to throw to a clip right now. I'm being told we have to. Need Noggle with a cough? You all right?
I apologize.
Oh, boy. This is Rosie part two.
Are your eyes working?
Are your eyes functional?
It's just one of them.
Oh, God. Full episodes of The Good Place are available on NBC.com and the NBC app. Let's listen to a clip.
So, here are the rules. Michael designs the new neighborhood however he wants. The bad place
just so people know listening at home, I'm off camera in this scene right now holding the tray of goodies I'm about to introduce, just so people know where I am in the scene. I just want the listeners to know while we're listening to the clip.
So, here are the rules. Michael designs the new neighborhood however he wants. The bad place gets to choose the four new humans, but they have to be the same general level of badness as the original four, all right? No serial killers, no dictators, no one who managed a boy band. Michael will not get the files in advance, so he does not have forever to plan, but he can then change the neighborhood however he wants.
Yeah, I have about a billion objections to this.
So do I.
Good. That means it's a fair compromise. So, one last issue. Where do we get all the other residents for this place?
Well, my original neighborhood was built for torture, so everyone was a demon. We can't have that. I say we get them from the good place.
Over my dead skin suit.
Well, what other option do we have?
Would anybody like a medium snack? I myself will be enjoying another classy martini. Don't mind if I do.
I can make the people. Just like I made Derek.
Are you sure?
Yes. If the judge restores my powers in the medium place, I can do it. They'll be way more advanced than the original Derek. No offense.
None taken.
Okay, the other residents will be comprised of Janet babies. You will have 1 year of Earth time to try to improve the humans. I will be monitoring everything to ensure there's no cheating and to track the humans' progress. Deal?
Ah, go! Ow!
Classic.
Ow! Boy, that scene that you've just listened to is famous in my mind for the for the olives.
Oh my goodness.
And this was the scene where I decided for some reason that I needed to destroy you, Mark Evan Jackson,
you
on
came
set.
For me so hard.
I came at you
right
real
away.
Hard. Real hard this day.
Jason Mantzoukas, in each subsequent take, would get this like novelty martini glass.
Yes.
Brimming with Spanish olives.
It's big enough for like seven martinis.
Oh, yeah. No, it's an absurd martini glass.
But you would just get it closer to my nose every time that you would pan it. You would reach your hand further towards my face. And like,
I believe started touching your cheek at some point if I could.
Yeah. And then about nine takes in, you were like, just so you know, I'm trying to break you. And it's like, I know. Well, are you kidding? Like, of course, I've been here the whole time, dude.
Right. And you weren't even on camera.
No. Yeah. Not even on camera. Just coming at you hard.
Oh, I mean, you were just trying to break
but
me.
But, like, very
never,
hard to make you break, I will say.
We never, I noticed there was one over in this where I can see myself. Like, it's, I don't think anybody would notice it. I'm gone, though.
Yeah.
I can see myself completely laughing.
David, can you take that smirk out?
Yeah. Can you change that smirk to a scowl?
Trust me, I've done stuff like that before. So.
Can you control shift F4, which replaces Mark's face with a smile to scowl?
Yes,
exactly.
Yes, yes. What else was on that tray? There was like, it was kind of easy cheese, but we couldn't say easy cheese. It was like tepid snacks.
Yeah, it was like crackers and cheese. None of it good, though.
Yeah,
all like
medium,
off-brand kind of stuff.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was very not appetizing at all.
It was one of those times on set where, first of all, this is out in Thousand Oaks somewhere. I hope it didn't burn down because
it was very hot.
It may have. It was very hot.
Yeah.
It was in a place where the California wildfires just happened. So I don't know about that ranch, frankly. But it was 1,000 degrees inside that house. And
there were flies everywhere.
There were flies.
There were
on our...
so many flies that would land on your face during takes.
Yeah, it was bad. Like on your eyeball.
I did some fly removal.
Is that
true?
Right?
Wow.
There were so many flies.
Yeah,
fly removal.
Although I remember the rationalization that like it is the medium place. There would be some flies.
Yeah,
not that many.
It's like no,
because that was gross. But it was also one of those days on set where Mantzoukas just decides like, sorry, wardrobe department, because you got olive juice and olives all over me, all over you,
oh, yeah.
and repeated takes.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, because I decided late in the game that Derek wanted to drink the martini he had, which would send olives cascading down my body. And just
and
the sound of it.
We made a beautiful
that's what broke
sound.
Me. That's what broke me. Just a really satisfying, like...
That sound would get you.
That's the only
thing I could do to get you. That is like it escalated to that, and
you're
just like
a sucker for Foley.
Yeah, I mean, and because Derek doesn't drink, like he nothing goes in his mouth, but he keeps doing the gesture, and it
What? And then of course, in true Maya Rudolph Paraguay fashion, you just made it longer. So you would say like, well, I enjoy my classy martini. And you would dribble some. Then the shift of the scene would focus and Ted would talk. And you'd still be going like, dip, 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 dip. Like, and it was like, stop. Like, we got to get out of this scene.
I will say the next day I came to work and I was in the van with Ted and we were driving up to set and Ted goes, it was really fun to watch you go after Mark yesterday. So once they decide upon what they're going to do, the good place and the bad place are fine with the rules. Michael and Janet set up out building in Mindy St. Clair's backyard the new neighborhood. And it's this kind of great moment where you are reminded how much, how far they've come, both emotionally, like how far Michael has come from a demon who's intent on torturing these people through eternity, but now is ferociously trying to protect them and do the right thing.
Yeah.
And Janet, a non-girl, non-robot, all-knowing entity, is finding ways to fall in love and be of service to Michael, and that the two of them have formed like this bond and this friendship that was like, to me, started in that episode last season that was like the kind of bottle episode for the two of them about being friends and about all of that, you know, because you're my...
The reason is friends.
The reason is friends. Right. Yeah, exactly. That this is, we're back there. Because even though they've been together a lot this season, it's been under duress or it's been under like this harried nature of, we got to do this, we got to do that, we got to check this, we got to check that. Now we see them again together building something and they have like such a sweet moment. And that's what I love about this show is that yes, there's all this high concept stuff. Yes, there's all this kind of wild, inventive, philosophical, interesting, moral, ethical conversations, but there is also still just like genuine, heartfelt, sweet, wonderful relationship storytelling, whether it's between, in this one too, like even like the little beats you see of Eleanor and Chidi's relationship. Hey, you know, get my boyfriend, somebody get my boyfriend. Like, little moments like that are really sweet. But this one, really, when they're building that, and Ted says to Darcy, like, well, I'm glad you're here doing this with me or whatever he says, that sentiment was like really landed. I was like, this is wonderful because the first thing she builds is their neighborhood again, you know?
Starting with that yogurt shop, which is like really nostalgic. Like to see that pop out of nothing, it's like, oh.
Especially when you haven't been there for a while.
Yeah, we haven't been to the village,
That version of it you haven't seen in a while, and that was, it's really lovely. And then, you know, Eleanor's house, and, you know, I love that moment when Chidi says, why did you have this, this house was meant to torture you. Why would you have them build it exactly the same? She's like, it's because this is where we fell in love. I thought that was, like, what could be a very kind of schmaltzy thing is incredibly sweet. It's
very sweet, right?
When put into context with all this other stuff. You know,
when the neighborhood sort of tiles together, when it sort of is like, you know, the sign at JFK that kind of comes in, I super noticed a ladybug, right?
Yes.
Are there other Easter eggy? Are the name of your grandchildren in it?
Not that I know of. No, it's in doing that. The original idea was it was supposed to be more of kind of just like a dissolvey time lapse thing, which is very easy on the visual effects side. But as we got into post, Mike's like, you know what? It'd be cool to see it actually build back. So what they had in the cut was from last season when the neighborhood folds up.
When the train is driving
away. Yeah, they basically had that in the cut played backwards.
Oh, interesting.
Wow. And Mike's like, yeah, you can just do this kind of the other way. And that was by far the biggest shot that we did last season. We had like another company do it and it took them like over 3 weeks and it was a lot of work. And
so that's a shot?
That's one shot.
So you're framing the neighborhood that we see in this episode coming in from a blank canvas as little tiles. That's a shot?
That's one shot.
And you've done 1,200 of those?
I've done 1,200 of those. So some are easier than others for sure. But for that one, and again, I had one day to do that shot.
Oh, God.
Because if you just do the math on it, I mean, I did probably the whole episode in about 3 weeks of 145 shots that I had to do. So doing the math, that's a lot of time and doing it really quick. So I was excited.
And it looks amazing.
Thanks for doing
it.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the first season I probably did maybe like 50% of the shots because I was at a company doing it. And like last season I did like 75% of the season. I think this season I did like 93%.
Wow. Well, and I don't want to lay blame on anyone, but I did co-write this episode with Chris Enso. He was very like, I want to put as many shots in as possible.
Yeah.
I want to blame Chris.
We have a company that we, you know, put work out to, and they do a lot of the big stuff. Like, you know, they do Todd as well. And
Fire Monsters.
Yeah. So, and they just nailed it.
Mandy. I'll look it up.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite Good Place moments is when Joe first did Todd. But so
well,
yeah,
because it was a prank.
It pretty much was.
I had to wear a green.
Wait, you did? You did it as mocap?
Well, no. I put on a green suit and stood and did the whole scene with Ted. And then afterwards, everyone's laughing, and I was like, "Why are you laughing?" I'm like, well, you don't actually have to be in the scene.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
And I also showed up that day because it wasn't in the script. I'm not sure if you guys have talked about it before. I just showed up and they're like, "Hey, do you want to? We're gonna put in a lava monster." I'm like, okay, that's normally really expensive and hard to do, but let's do it. Mm-hmm. And Joe was there. I was like, hey, Joe, you do the voice for today.
Right.
And they were talking about maybe even replacing it, but it's like, no, it's Joe. Seeing Joe. And he had his glasses on.
Because I can't see without my glasses, so I'm wearing a full green suit and then like glasses on the outside of the suit.
Please, does that footage exist?
Yeah, it's on my Instagram.
Oh, it is?
I have a photo of it, yeah.
That's great. I didn't know that. That's hilarious.
So, and then he caught on and he's just like, I'll do an ADR, you know?
Yeah.
I'm thinking there should be an offshoot of Todd and the Need Noggle.
Todd and the Need Noggle. Previously on Todd and the Need Noggle. That's a show I would 100% watch.
I'm reconsidering this guest host.
Full-time host, Jason Manzoukas, right back here on the Good Place podcast, talking about tiny boys' penises. Do they work? ? I feel like Morgan needs to walk in right now to be like, what are you doing? We can't use any of that.
Should we get one?
Can we get one podcast episode where Jason doesn't say tiny boys'
penises? I will say that this is giving an accurate representation of what it's like to be in a writer's room, because you commit to these bits and you go to the furthest extent, and then that's the moment Morgan walks in.
Yeah.
It's when you're saying something that you should be fired for saying.
Oh, yeah. No, this is true. And this is what I feel like, this is what I try and get away with on this show.
Yeah.
Is like, can I heighten more until somebody he says, no, don't do that. Don't stop doing the thing you're doing now.
Morgan!
Yeah.
Promotional consideration is furnished by the following totally real advertiser.
Taizen Day's autobiography chocolate book, the no-holds-barred autobiography and national okay seller by one of the most infamous YouTube personalities, has finally arrived. Taizen Day, the bass singing voice that shocked both people and speaker setups around the world, tells all. The New York Times hails Chocolate Book as, quote, technically a book. Like, legally, you'd have to admit that this is several pieces of paper correctly numbered containing texts that are bound together. The Washington Post calls it, quote, a sign that things on Earth are getting worse, inexorably. A sort of second law of thermodynamics, but for just like goodness instead of energy. Sold anywhere you get your books, which means Amazon.
So while the neighborhood has been made, and now it needs to be populated, and Janet has decided she can make the people just like she made Derek, and we see her trying, and finally producing a person, and it looks like it's not easy. It's strenuous.
It's work, right?
Yeah. So you realize it's going to take a while to put the whatever 180 some odd people, I think, is necessary to put in the neighborhood. And then we see that Michael is in his office. He gets a call from the judge, only it is dun, dun, dun. It's Sean.
Yeah. What a stupid gag, but it's so funny that, like, Sean took the time to fake his caller ID, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, just to be like, ah, you're stupid.
Yeah. And it's Sean who is calling Michael to say what?
To say bad luck.
Yeah.
I hope this doesn't go well. And no matter what happens, when you fail, which is what Sean believes will happen, we're going to torture your four humans forever. And guess who's going to be doing it? And we've built a Michael suit.
Dun, dun, dun!
That was so much fun to shoot because Ted Danson playing Tia Sirkar, playing Vicky, playing Michael was the weirdest, most inside out meta.
There's such great in this, like in the Janet's episode as well, it's actors playing other characters playing, like doing other characters, you know, from the show, which I loved. Ted's vibe was so silly and funny.
And he's so game.
Like,
he's so up for it. He took Joe and me aside and he's like, so Tia does this, right? And we're like, yes, she does. She often says things, I don't even know if it's scripted, but we find Tia as Vicky saying things twice. Well, she'll be like, it was gross. Grossa.
Yeah.
And so we sort of coached him through.
And then I was like, oh, and since she's playing you, you should really emphasize that you, Ted, say Eleanor as Eleanor. Right. And then that threw him for a loop. He was like, what? I do? And I was like, has no one told you that you say Eleanor?
Yeah. Ted Danson, as Michael, says the word Eleanor, the name Eleanor, Eleanor.
Eleanor.
Which I had never even dialed in myself.
It's a very slight you know, it's a very small difference, but I was like, well, Vicky would definitely notice that difference and like emphasize it. And then
But you saw Ted Danson go, saying for 3 years?
Wait, no, I say Eleanor. And I was like, I know. And he's like, no, I'm saying, it was like,
I'm saying it right.
I'm saying right. No, it's, it was.
He was so game make himself. And then when I'm talking down the barrel of the camera, he's next to me and you see him like, going like, oh, his sleeves are weird.
Yeah.
You know, like he's investigating this suit for the first time.
It's so physical. It's such a great bit of silly physical work that I love. I love when he's doing that. I love this season when he's been like like Zach Pizzazz, when he's trying to take on other personas. Sure.
Yeah. His sort of Miami Vice midlife crisis was phenomenal.
Like when he's doing that stuff, it is a absolute delight.
Everyone loves acting on this show. Every character is just like game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Vicky wants a limp and an accent. Stage fright.
Up to and including him flossing in this episode.
He does. Early in the episode, when he's trying to impress the judge about how Earth is like a chaotic nightmare now, and it's hard to earn enough points, he then, in a desperate attempt, just does the flossing dance.
When things aren't going well, he starts flossing.
I would have liked to have been part of this is who's going to teach Ted how to do this.
Have you seen a lot of the stuff went viral as far as like there's a lot of clips of like on set of them doing it. So it's going to be interesting to see people see that like, no, that was actually for the show Ted was trying to learn that. It's been a lot of
Ted's so serious about his craft. He's like, well, I don't want to do this incorrectly. I have to do the backpack kid dance.
There's a great moment in the boardroom scene where between takes, Ted got up and he was standing behind Kristen Bell's chair. And he was just like so in the zone and in the slowest of motions, hips went one way and arms went the other and then back. And he's like, I think at one point he even had his eyes closed. And I got Kristen's attention. I was like, And she opened her phone and put the camera towards herself and recorded over her own shoulder of Ted doing it. And then, you know, he opened his eyes finally and realized, and they all laughed. Yeah. And Kristen Bell closed her phone and looked at me and said, you're a good friend. Joe Mandy is uniquely responsible for giving me some of my career favorite lines, including butthole spiders. But to in tandem end a phone call in unison with Ted Danson saying the words, bye, bitch. And the only note that came was, Mark, could you add about 6 more M's to the That was only note. You're like,
Yeah.
I love that. That's great. That and penis bees or bees with penises also made me laugh. Too. Your look is so good. Your tiny look down and at the paper is so good before you say penis bees.
Such a dumb bit. I love it so much.
Yes, my idea that I just came up with, penis bees.
And just, you know, what's interesting is that phone call with the Vicky suit, that was a very late addition to the script.
I mean,
we were working on this episode in particular until like the very last moment. Like that was like, you know, we're very deliberate most of the time, but the way the schedule happened, we just were running like right up against the clock, and like then the room was still deliberating of what was the best way to like torture Michael. And then that day of, we got, it was like, of course Michael's suit.
I'll tell you what was even more fun about that particular instance, that as we're doing this scene, the cast starts filing in, you know, Manny and Will and Jamila and Darcy and Kristen, because they're all about to come to work. So they were all there watching Ted and me go bye bitch 40 times. Ugh.
That's really fun. There's like, this show affords us so many opportunities to say deeply funny and deeply silly things.
Weird
and
things.
That's very lucky. It's pretty terrific. Okay, and then we kind of settle into it ends up where Michael is in his office. He's getting ready. The clock is counting down now, 5 minutes until the first arrival. He's now been given this information that Sean is, you know, undermining what the process is going to be. Mm-hmm. And is intent on ruining it for Michael and destroying the friendships that he's made. Eleanor arrives. Michael, like, implodes. He has, like, a full panic attack, nervous breakdown.
Another one, yeah.
Can't do it. Can't go forward with this. The person has woken up and is in the ante room there saying, you know, hello, is anybody here, whatever. And it's Brandon Scott Jones, just so people know, BSJ, a fantastic New York-based improviser at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York, a deeply funny human being.
Funny.
And so, and Eleanor, I think, realizes the end of the episode seems to be that she's going to have to step up, you know, that Michael is not going to be able to assume his architect responsibilities, and she's going to have to kind of fill his shoes if she can, or something to that effect. Mm-hmm, and that's kind of where we go out.
Right.
So, Joe, I'm just going to put it to you. Can you explain to us what happens in the next episode and then next season? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Walk us through the next season of television
sure.
on The Good Place.
Look, I would say that it's heavily influenced by a movie called Entourage.
Oh. Right? Oh. I love where this is going.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Mark Evan Jackson, what's good?
I think that... I think that improvisation is good. Improv is what has led me to all of these opportunities and introduced me to some of the best friends of my life. And improv is a skill, as I've said many times on this show, that is good for everyone, not just people hoping to be comedians or actors. And I encourage everyone to seek out an improv class because it makes you, it removes fear and it makes you a more confident and interesting and interested person. And I believe in it so wholeheartedly that my wife and I started a charity in Detroit to offer improv free of charge in Detroit middle and high schools. It's called the Detroit Creativity Project. And our flagship program inspires and empowers middle and high schoolers with the art of improvisation. You can check it out at dcpimprov.org.
We just did a wonderful event at a theater here in Los Angeles where we did an improv show.
We did.
With the cast of The Good Place.
That was so much fun. Thank you so much for doing that.
It was a blast. It was a blast.
It was so much fun. And the fact that you guys came out on a Friday night just before the holidays to support this and that 1,000 people came from all over the country and all over this city to come and support was huge. It's something I could cry about right now. Is that what you want?
Yeah, cry. Cry those tears. Ruin your computer with them.
It was a ridiculous amount of fun, and we're going to do it again. I hope in the spring, maybe just before we start rolling on season 4. But in addition to, you know, tremendous support for the Detroit Creativity Project and a super good time, when you rent a theater, they let you put whatever you want on the marquee. I got to put the Good Place cast Total Forking Shirt Show on a Broadway marquee in downtown Los Angeles.
It was a blast. It was really really terrific. It's such a and also just it was really fun. And
I'm crying.
And I will back your choice. I think improv is just like, you know, hard
stuff. I think stand-up's pretty good.
It's fine. I mean, stand-up is whatever. No,
stand-up
I'm kidding.
Exists.
Stand-up is also comedy, I guess. David Niednagel, what is good?
I would have to say, you know, just kind of my mindset of how much I've been working on the show, that my wife is good. I think to say I worked a lot is an understatement, and my wife's been a champion through that, and just kind of with our kids and stuff, and just kind of never complaining and always being supportive.
You're referring to Mason and Dot?
Mason and Dot, yeah. And so I couldn't have done it without her. I mean, for the last 7 months, been working 100-hour weeks every week. Ooh. So, and I'm very grateful and thankful for her.
I like that. That's pretty great. Joe Mandy, what's good?
Well, we were talking a lot about flossing in this episode.
We have been.
But I think flossing is good. I floss every
flossing
day.
Flossing your teeth? Yeah.
I'm a huge proponent. A lot of people don't like it.
I'm not 100% convinced this doesn't end with Sloan.
Well, the dental hygienist is so impressed with you.
Wow.
I can't tell you how many times I've been told, like, wow, this is great. I wish everyone flossed as much as you.
Oh, man, that must make you feel really great, Joe.
I feel great. I don't feel weird.
One of the best shows on television. That should daily make you feel like the hygienist's approval is yours.
I mean, if we're going to get into it, I have a tongue scraper. I recommend that.
Oh, boy.
My brush.
Do you use proper floss or do you use one of those, like...
super floss.
Yeah, one of those things.
The little mechanical.
Those little picks or whatever.
The picks I have in my car. So I have those in my car. That's fine if you're like,
you know... Are you the one leaving them all over Los Angeles?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
You know what else is good? Throwing away your floss when you're done.
Don't litter.
Just take care of your mouth.
So what you're saying, it sounds like what you're boiling it down to, what's good is flossing and don't litter.
You know who taught me this is Sloan.
Oh, God. This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm your guest host, Jason Manzoukas. Mark Evan Jackson will be back next week unless you get on Twitter and let him know that I should be the permanent host of this. Let's stage a coup. Thank you for listening. Now go do something good. And let that good thing be tweeting Mark Evan Jackson that he is straight up fired from his position as host of this podcast. Because...
Janet, what have we learned today?
A good place was the place inside of us all along that was good.
Oh, Janet, have you been sneaking magnets again?
You've been sneaking magnets.
Oh, this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
That was Lizzie Pace. Mm. Music composed by David Schwartz.
Edited by Trey Booty. Booty? Booty.
Oh, Janet.